Good morning and welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, and Calvin Butenhoff coming to you live from our studio in steamy downtown Waukesha. You can always join us. You can call, you can text. It's the same number, 855-752-4842. Or leave a comment on the live stream if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We have a very, very busy show today. Happy Juneteenth. First of all, Angela Lang, who is the executive director of Block, Black Leaders Organizing Communities, joining us at 10:33. Really glad she was able to squeeze us in. I know she is a very, very busy day today with all the Juneteenth celebrations going on. So we will talk about that with her coming up right after the 10:30 news. It's Wednesday. That means Dr. Laura Hanks will be here at 11:33 for our public cervix announcement. If you ever have a question for Dr. Hanks, you can text it in. You can always email us at janesays, J-A-N-E-S-A-Y-S, janesays at civicmedia.us. We have some breaking news coming out of Madison. Mm-hmm. So we are going to be joined right now by our civic news team member, Savannah Tomei Olson is here. Good morning, Savannah.
Good morning. We've had a crazy morning over here.
That's what it sounds like. And I am not clear on all of the details. So what actually happened this morning in downtown Madison?
You know, the beautiful thing about it is that our offices are right on State Street. So we have our morning show, John and Gordy, recording on the air at the exact time that this happened. So to be able to put the pieces together, because you can actually hear some of it, is super helpful as we retell this narrative. So what the fire department says is that there was some smoke coming out of manhole covers. So they were responding to that. We can hear the sirens that are already going off underneath John and Gordy while they're talking. And then out of nowhere, you hear this big boom. And what the fire department says, it almost sounds like a cartoon. They said that you could see the manhole covers go 5 to 6 feet up in the air.
Wow.
Which is just wild. I wish we could have seen something like that, because I don't think I've ever heard of that happening in real life. Just, it sounds almost Bugs Bunny-like. So then they had to search around. They were looking for sources of a fire because there was all this smoke. They ended up finding in a building where there had previously been some sort of fire that had already died out. There were two construction workers in this building that were under construction. They're both at the hospital, expected to be okay. But downtown Madison is kind of a mess right now as they figure out how to move forward from here.
I can imagine. I mean, I was just there staying at the Hampton Inn and Suites, which is right down the street from where this blast happened. And there's so much construction going on in that area already. I can only imagine the congestion nightmare as people have to avoid this area now.
Yeah, it's already a mess with all of the summer construction downtown in that area, especially around State Street. So you add this on top of it. The fire department told us that there were four different streets that had super heavy congestion or were blocked off in some way. So I imagine a lot of people were late to work this morning if they were headed downtown.
I would imagine so. Anything else? Any current updates or anything, Savannah?
Just that those two construction workers are expected to be okay, and it sounds like they're going to try to figure out the source of this fire throughout the rest of the day here.
Well, keep us posted, and well done, everybody in Madison, for being right on top of this, because literally you were right on top of this. And I'm so glad to hear that those two guys were not seriously hurt.
Yeah, great news there. Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Savannah Tomei Olson with our news department. With Civic Media, thank you so much for joining us, Savannah. Really appreciate it. And she will be keeping us updated along with our entire news team all morning long with news at the top and the bottom of the hour. So thank you so much, Savannah, for that. We're going to start off with something that's a little bit heavy, but I think it's really important because these happen with such frequency that they don't even make much of a ripple anymore. Mm. And I don't think a lot of people are aware of a mass shooting that happened in Michigan on Saturday at a splash pad.
Yeah. Yeah.
A Michigan couple shot 7 times on Saturday as they tried to shield their daughters from a gunman who opened fire at a splash pad in Rochester Hills. Michaela and Eric Coughlin and their daughters, 2 and 7 months, had been at the splash pad for less than a minute when this guy drove up, 42-year-old Michael William Nash, pulled up in his vehicle and started just firing at surrounding families. They were just getting ice cream with their kids, with their girls, when they heard the sound of gunfire as the shots ran out. The Coughlins grabbed their daughters and ran. And as they were running away, they were shot 7 times. Both hospitalized after the shooting. Their kids are okay.
Yep.
But Michaela and Eric now facing a long recovery.
Yeah.
Just because you survive a shooting doesn't mean everything goes back to normal.
Yeah.
You are changed forever.
Yeah. We like to live by the idea of critical condition, stable condition. And as soon as we hear stable condition, we're like, oh,
he's fine.
It's going to be fine. They're going to be out soon and life will be back. No, it will never, ever be the same.
And there can be lifelong health ramifications.
Yes. Mental and physical.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So this couple, the Coughlins, were among 9 people shot by the gunman, including an 8-year-old boy in critical condition with a wound to the head, a 4-year-old boy in stable condition with a wound to the thigh, a 39-year-old woman shot in the stomach and the leg, also in critical condition. The Oakland County Sheriff, Michael Bouchard, said the shooting was random and bizarre and that the gunman had no known connections to the victims.
Yeah.
And this happens so frequently, my friends. It just doesn't even register anymore.
Nope. I'm looking it up right now because I want to know how many mass shootings there have been in this country. I mean, it's
since the beginning of the year.
124.
124 mass shootings.
That I can see right now.
And a mass shooting is described as 4 or more people being injured. 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Cindy from Appleton joining us. Good morning, Cindy. Thanks for calling in. What did you want to say?
Well, doesn't this kind of make the case for banning bump stocks? I mean, this kind of stuff is just totally gotten out of hand, and I think if this guy would have had a bump stock, he probably would have taken out a whole lot more people. I don't understand our Supreme Court. It's like bump stocks all of a sudden have more rights than I do, and I'm just wondering if they're going to be given the opportunity to vote someday because they seem to have more rights than people now.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Cindy, and I'm glad you brought up the bump stocks because we wanted to tie this into that. Granted, in this instance, this man did not have a bump stock, but why... Please explain to me, if you were a gun owner, why you need that. Why? The shooting in Las Vegas fired more than 1,000 rounds in under 10 minutes using a bump stock. 1,000 rounds in under 10 minutes. And lest we forget, the Las Vegas massacre killed 60 people and injured hundreds more. Like, I think 800 people were hurt.
Yet there are going to be people who want to talk to us and say, but you don't understand. It's not about it. Well, it's a tragedy and we give our thoughts and prayers to them.
But there's nothing we can do about it.
Nope. That's it. Wash our hands of it.
Thank you so much for calling, Cindy. And as always, thank you for listening. Really, really appreciate it. 855-752-4842. I don't understand. So
don't.
Please help me understand why you need a bump stock. What purpose does it serve? Except to fire more rounds more quickly and injure more people and kill more people. Isn't that kind of the whole point?
I mean, it's really designed for one thing. Bump stock wasn't for defending freedom. It's to fire bullets faster.
And I can't imagine you use something like that at a gun range.
I don't know if you're allowed to. I don't know. It sounds like a bump stock's, well, up until recently, illegal. Like, you couldn't take those for fear of the danger, but I don't know. It's, you know, we've talked about this issue so many times and you always say, and I don't disagree. No one's trying to take your guns. No one's trying to take your, but I will say this, and this is me, Greg Bach, not you, Jane Matinair, not Calvin, not Civic Media or Matinair on Air. This is me personally. It's not a really good case for keeping the guns either, when people, one, can just find them, buy them, use them, hurt people. And these are, by the way, people who are, you know, we can't say that they're lone wolves on every day. These are people who buy these guns legally. They train legally. They have the certifications, I'm sure. But the other thing too is I don't know. I don't want to say I want to take your guns. I don't want to take your guns. I really don't. But it comes down to the fact that when we show over and over and over and over again that we can't do this correctly, and then coming back, gun advocates, political, religious leaders, all they say is thoughts and prayers. There's nothing we can do. Well,
it is what it is.
Is that a good enough excuse when your kid messes up? Sorry, it's nothing I can do. It's just what it is. I mean, I'm a kid.
It's the price we pay for freedom, Greg.
Exactly. So it's tiring. I don't want to take people's guns, but it also feels like at some point you haven't shown that you can play with them well. And I'm sorry if you are a responsible gun owner, you're not getting up off your butts and talking to the people who need to hear it. The fact that how many people support background checks now?
A vast majority. And red flag laws.
And red flag laws. So, but you're not talking to your politicians, the lobbyists, just to say, no, we need to be protected too. We don't want to give up our guns, but do something for us.
The gunman, 42-year-old Nash, was found later dead of an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound. Alongside his body, they found a semi-automatic rifle, which police say suggested he could have had plans for a second chapter.
Yeah.
And as Cindy pointed out, just imagine the carnage if he had had a bump stock at a splash pad in Michigan. 855, I'm cranky, 752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Stay with us. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. And she starts to cry. A swing man. She can't hurt. She don't mean no harm. She just don't know what else to do about it. James says. Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and Calvin coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha, where you can always join us at 855-752-4842 or leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up after the 10:30 news, Angela Lang, the executive director of BLOC, which is Black Leaders Organizing for Communities, will be joining us to talk about what it is that they do, all of the Juneteenth celebrations going on in Milwaukee, which was one of the earliest places to celebrate Juneteenth. Mm-hmm. And Angela had an award-winning column in the Recombobulation area.
Yes, indeed.
And we're going to talk to her about that as well, as far as Black voters and their concerns heading into the November election. But we are starting off, yes, it's a very heavy topic, but I think it's important that we all are aware of these things, because I think a lot of people didn't even realize this happened. Saturday, there was a mass shooting at a splash pad in Michigan, and 9 people were shot. Amazingly, no one was killed. We do have a little boy who's in critical condition and several other adults who are seriously wounded. The gunman is dead, but they do say when they found him, he had another weapon that could have been a second chapter.
Yeah.
Oakland County Executive Dave Coulter, because there were 2 other mass shootings in Michigan on Saturday.
Yeah, that was the other thing I was looking up.
Yeah. I can only describe the last 24 hours as a nightmare. We're getting all too good at this. Yes, we are.
We've been experts for years.
Think about the fact that the Sandy Hook kids are now graduating from high school.
Yeah, I saw that the other day. They left empty chairs for all the kids who didn't live. And yet there are some people still who have the audacity, the disgusting audacity to say, that wasn't real. That was fake. crisis actors.
Yeah, and that's a that leads to a whole topic, which we don't have time for right now, about Alex Jones.
Yeah.
And hopefully everything getting liquidated. Not that this is going to make any difference for those families who suffered from that tragedy.
Yeah.
But there should be some punishment.
There, I mean,
for what Alex Jones and his listeners put those parents through is a living nightmare. They were already in a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
And then to have to deal with this after losing their children, being told that you're liars, it was fake actors, it was a false flag. I can't even imagine what those people had to go through. Brendan on the live stream says, why do you need a weapon of war?
I mean, that, once again, not trying to take your guns, but no one ever gives me a good enough, like, you hunt, fine, you have a rifle. You want home defense, a pistol. That's all you need. You don't need, like, when I see pictures of families where they're like proudly showing off their 70 guns, that's become your personality. I was thinking about this the other day. I saw a guy walking down the street wearing a hat, a t-shirt, and yeah, a hat and a t-shirt that extolled his love for guns. I'm like, it's gone. It goes from one thing to be an enthusiast to like, I'm a hunter or I just like guns, to it's a fetish. And that's your entire personality. And you're pushing your face. Jane, I love guitars. I could talk about guitars all day long, about everything about them. I don't have a t-shirt that says, I love guitars, want to talk about it. I don't have a t-shirt that says, if you don't love guitars, get out of my country. Why does it have to be pushed in our faces so much that you love guns so much?
And fetish is the exact word I was thinking of.
Yeah.
That's the exact word. Brendan from New Jersey is on the line. Good morning, Brendan. Thank you for joining us. What did you want to say?
Well, I just noticed that Andrew from Maine, you know, from Maine, is going to try to argue that an AR-15 is good for hunting wolves, but, you know, I guess. The one other thing you didn't mention, you had the splash pad shooting. The FBI, who our friend Miss Crazy Green wants to shut down, actually stopped a shooter in Georgia who was going to an event to shoot multiple people in the effort to try to start some kind of race war.
Yeah,
down there.
I saw that. He was going to. He was.
Him.
Go ahead.
Yeah. They caught him at the event with going in, but they were tracking him, so they just wanted to catch him in the act, I guess, trying to get in there. But there is a lot of things going on, and the funny thing is the right doesn't realize that if Chili Face gets in, well, you know what's going to happen? He's going to come for your guns because he doesn't want you coming for him. So you might want to all think about that as you're in the voting booth there. If you think you're safe just because a certain guy with a hair hat's in office and that he's not going to come and get your guns, because once you all wake up and realize what he's up to, you might come at him. That's all I had to say.
I appreciate you listening, Brendan, and thank you so much for calling in. 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream. On Facebook, YouTube, and the platform Elon continues to actively ruin. Bob from Waukesha on the line. We got about 3 minutes left, Bob. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. I've come to the conclusion, because of the NRA and because of all the Republicans dominating our government, that we're never going to get rid of guns totally. We're not even going to have sensible restrictions. Bump stocks, any automatic weapon is, I believe you have to get a federal permit to get an automatic weapon, which is, that is more scrutinized than just getting a regular gun. But my conclusion is, and this is another hard one, probably as impossible as banning guns, they need to fortify the schools. They need to give the schools the money they need to make the school impenetrable to these crazy people that go in mass shootings at schools. That, to me, would be the easiest way to solve the problem.
Well, it would certainly help, Bob. It certainly would help. And I think, thank you so much for listening and thank you for calling. I think that we talked about that after that attempted shooting in Mount Horeb.
Mm-hmm.
And the hardening efforts they had done in that school. And we've talked to other people about putting in shrubbery and other things so you can't see in the windows of schools.
Yeah.
So I think you have a valid point. I don't think arming teachers is the answer.
I don't.
I think that's a terrible idea.
I don't think.
And I think bump stocks are a terrible idea.
And if we're going to, I mean, I understand where Bob is coming from, but if we want to spend this money to fortify every single school in this country, but we're not going to spend the money to fund these schools for the things they need, that shows where the priorities are. And that's, that bothers me just as much. I want the kids to be safe. Don't get me wrong. I want those kids to be safe, but I want them to get an education too.
They shouldn't have to be worried about that.
They shouldn't have to do drills that, you know, what happens if someone comes? I mean, that's just insanity to me.
Jim from Appleton texting and listening in Green Bay on WGBW. There have been a number of times that individual gun owners have called Congress in support of bills for common sense regulation. The problem is that they are individuals. The NRA is a big organization, and that's scary for them. And Jim, we've said this many times. There are many, many, probably most gun owners are responsible gun owners. I don't dispute that. But even in this case in Michigan, this 42-year-old, from what I've seen so far, he has no prior record.
Yeah.
So he was a great gun owner until Saturday.
Exactly.
News is coming up next. When we return, Angela Lang, the executive director of Block, will be here. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network. Carry on. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and Calvin B. coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join us, call or text. It's the same number, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Very excited to have our next guest joining us. And I'm so impressed you were able to make time for us today because I know you are busy. Angela Lang is the executive director for Block. That's Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. Good morning, Angela. How are you?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me. Happy Juneteenth.
Happy Juneteenth.
Happy Juneteenth.
Absolutely. So for people who do not know, and there are still lots of people who do not know, what is the origin of Juneteenth and its particular tie to Milwaukee?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think a lot of folks are like, we get this random holiday. What is it about? But it is for Black folks. It's the day that we call our kind of Freedom Day. What is actually really important that I think that a lot of folks don't know is that Milwaukee has like the second largest Juneteenth festival. There are times people are like, do y'all do it on the weekends? No, whatever day of the week it is, they're there, even if it's after work, a little bit before work. And it's a really good time for folks to just kind of be in community with each other, support Black businesses. There's a lot of amazing vendors, a lot of great food, which sometimes if you're tabling can be a problem because you're just eating the whole day. And, you know, it's always great to see folks. You know, it's one of those places where you go down and you always run into what feels like half of Milwaukee because everyone is there. So I'm really looking forward to it. So our team is down there. They were part of the parade. They were helping out and volunteering. And then we have a table as well. So I'll be headed down later today.
It's amazing to me because this stems back to 1865 and soldiers went to Galveston, Texas to make sure that the people who had been enslaved there knew that they had been freed. Oh yeah. 2 years ago. Whoops.
Yeah. Yep. Text messages weren't exactly a thing. Right. And so I remember hearing this in school and I was like, I guess it makes sense. It takes a long time for word to travel, but it's also like, I'm pretty sure people weren't, you know, exactly screaming out from the rooftops to make sure everybody and every enslaved person knew they were suddenly free.
Well, and it's interesting that you say that because I saw an article this morning that said the exact same thing. The soldiers kind of went there to make sure that these people were being treated like full-fledged citizens instead of still slaves.
And then even today, right, you know, we have what people know as slavery and enslavement has ended, but also things like the 13th Amendment and understanding that slavery still exists in prisons as well, unfortunately, too, and what that means for our community. So I think right now, Juneteenth is always a celebration. It's always a happy day. But I think also it's a sobering reminder of all the work that we need to continue to do.
Angela, speaking of the work you do, and you said that at the block is going to be down by the festivities today. Talk to us about Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. You are the executive director. What is it? What is the main goal of your organization with regard to your community and the community at
home? Yeah, we're a year-round civic engagement organization that launched in November of 2017. In some ways, it was a response to the 2016 outcome. But I think what was more frustrating for me personally at the time was that there were so many people that said, well, if you would have just voted, we wouldn't be here. If your people would have just voted. And I was like, that's not the right analysis. We're also, to say the least. But I felt that if we didn't like actually have an honest conversation about the lack of engagement to the Black community, shortly after the 2016 election, there was a national article written that interviewed Black men in a local barbershop, and they explained why they didn't vote. They didn't feel any candidate actually spoke to them. And quite literally, no candidate spoke to them. They did not get a single door knock or anything. They saw ads, but that's not enough. And so for us, it was like, that is the crux of some of the work that we have to do. And instead of waiting for a candidate or a campaign to do that work for us, we were going to do that work ourselves. We have a very for us, by us model with folks from the community of what we call ambassadors. So they're what I like to call canvassers on steroids, but they're year-round organizers. They're talking to folks in the community. They're talking about civic engagement. Do you know the difference between a state senator and a U.S. senator? Both are on the maybe on your ballot this year, depending on where you live. You'll absolutely have a U.S. senator. And so doing that education is so important for us. And I think what makes us different is that, one, we're protective of our community, but we're also making sure that we're being present on a year-round basis. We're not just leaving a couple, you know, days or a couple months after an election. We're here year-round. And so that allows us to, I think, break through some of the voter fatigue that's going to set in the next couple months because people have built up a relationship with us.
Angela Lang is the executive director of BLOC, which is Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. We're talking about Juneteenth, also the work that BLOC does. And you make such a good point, Angela, and I think the Democrats have been very, it's on them for not going to these communities to talk to constituents and certainly just showing up in an election year to say, hi, I love you guys, vote for me. That's not the right way to go about setting up engagement.
Absolutely. And, you know, we find ourselves having to rebuild the wheel, you know, every couple of years, stand up that infrastructure like, OK, now it's time to hire all these people to talk to folks in the community. What if we don't have to do that every year? You know, granted, you know, our team scales up and scales down, but at bare minimum, we keep at least 20 of our folks on in between election cycles. And let's be honest, it's Wisconsin. So there's an election. I think the longest stretch we go is like 10 months without an election. So there's really no time to kind of pack up and then kind of rebuild later on. What I will say, and I don't know if this is the same, my colleagues across the country would say this with their Democratic Party, but I do believe that the state Democratic Party has learned a lesson. They've been present. They have been engaging. I appreciate the calls that we get just to be able to have that line of communication, especially with folks like Ben Wickler. And so I think, you know, that was a wake up call here in Wisconsin for a lot of folks. And I'm glad that, you know, certain parties, not both parties, but at least one party saw that as an opportunity to go further and engage with our community.
And I think the Democrats have done that, too, with more rural areas. Finally,
absolutely.
They are constituents too. We are all Wisconsin, right? And so, yeah, there was some short-sightedness there, I think, for a long time. And then finally, in the last 10 years, and certainly since Ben Wickler has taken over and done such an amazing job, Democrats are finally getting their messaging better.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, shout out to the staff over at DPW that is doing the best they can and having really difficult conversations with community members right now, but not shying away from it, which I think is appreciated and what I respect.
You know, in my time of organizing campaigns, the difference it makes, and we've talked to other people either running for office or elected officials, The difference it makes, and I'm thinking about those men you're talking about in the barbershop, the difference it makes to walk into a place, knock on a door and say, hello, my name is, I'm running for this. Tell me about you. Have that 5-minute conversation to start that relationship. It makes the difference. It makes, and I'm not talking about the vote. Like, you may or may not get their vote. You can't control that. But what you can do is you can say, I want to talk to you because you are the person who is ultimately going to be in charge of me if I get elected. And I want to know what goes on in your life. Tell me about you. And like that, the smiles, you see people's shoulders getting all tense when they talk to politicians, when they start to melt down a little because, this person wants to speak to me. They're looking me in the eye. They're concerned about me and my life. That makes all the difference in an election. And it makes me so happy to see candidates make that effort to really connect with the possible constituents. It really is. And my heart goes out to those men in the barbershop. You're like, we don't get visits. Yeah, that's what happens.
I mean, what a novel concept, knocking on someone's door, asking them what they care about, and not just being a salesperson and selling yourself, right? And saying, hey, this is why you should vote for me. And one of the things I say is that I've been a part of political campaigns or issue-based campaigns where knocking on doors was a part of the strategy and the tactics we used. But it was, hey, my name is Angela and I'm working on this campaign. Let me tell you about it. Are you interested in joining? And at no point was there like an actual dialogue, right? Yeah. And so for our team, we start every conversation, whether it's a nonpartisan conversation or knocking about our endorsed candidates, we always start with, what does it look like for the Black community to thrive? And sometimes for a while, people looked at us like, what? Because people weren't used to being even asked what they thought and what their issues were. And they were like, what are you really here for? And we're like, no, we really want to know. So folks were skeptical because they hadn't seen that in a while. And everything that we hear on doors has made its way into our block agenda, which guides our work, and being able to take the issues that we're hearing and directly relay them to the governor's office or to the county executive's office and say, hey, we have X amount of people in this neighborhood that said that they all need, for example, a speed bump. Let's connect them with their alder. So we're doing some of that work out on the doors. But then people are also like, wow, I talked to you, and either they may or may not get that speed bump, but they appreciate that we're there, we're educating them. And even when our team is knocking on doors in the neighborhood, some folks are saying, I was wondering when you'd be back. I heard you talk to my neighbor last week. I was waiting for you. I got some more stuff to tell you. So, that's how you actually build, is by asking people what they care about and then being able to build that relationship and work together.
Welcome to my home, Angela. I have a list. I'll just straight out ask it. You know, you say you ask them, what is it for you to thrive? What are the answers you're hearing at the doors? Because, I think a lot of politicians think, well, I think what Black, and you're like, no, we're not asking you. Don't talk for this group. You're asking the question, Angela, what is it coming from the Black community here that you connect with? What are the concerns, and to thrive, what are they thinking about right now?
I'll say initially, when we ask that question, people are like, I don't know, I'm just trying to survive.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think anyone has thought about what a thriving world looked like. So there were times in the beginning we had to kind of ask that question multiple times because people are like, I don't know. We're like,
never thought
well,
about
if
it.
If you could change one thing about your neighborhood, what would it be? So we ask in a lot of different ways. But I will say what comes up a lot is criminal justice, right? Every time there is a officer involved shooting or any type of violence, or somebody that they know and their family felt they were unjustifiably sentenced in court. So that is a big issue, especially when we're knocking in places like 53206. People are talking about how, despite the job numbers and all these statistics that keep coming out, people are still struggling. It's still hard to make ends meet. Things like childcare. But at the end of the day, I think people are excited to talk and engage and to talk about those answers. We've heard everything from micro level issues to, there used to be a basketball court at this park. Who can I talk to about that? To, I don't know about if I can pay student loans or healthcare or I have all this debt. So we've heard a whole range of things, but I would definitely say the economy, mass incarceration, and programs for the youth. I think there's a lot of attention, especially now that the summer is happening, making sure that youth have positive things to do in the summer. And we're actually supporting our youth and not, just because they do little stupid things here and there, doesn't mean we're going to just lock them up. How are we as adults and as community members providing opportunities for youth? And that comes up a lot as well.
Well, and I think Earl Ingram has mentioned this on his show. He's on from 8 to 10 across the Civic Media Radio Network. It takes a village. Hillary Clinton famously said that, right? We're all involved with all our kids, whether you want to be or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then it goes to show, like, I think a lot of folks know our work because it's very political. But we also do like non-political stuff too. And so on June 1st, we actually had a Wellness in the Park event where it rained out a little bit, but everybody had a good time. There were food trucks. There was a DJ. It was co-sponsored by the Milwaukee Parks Foundation that was giving out like different coupons, and we had different resource centers and COVID testing. And it wasn't political at all. And the kids, despite the rain, were dancing in the rain in their ponchos, playing football. And that's also, to me, while it's not political, Black joy inherently is politicized these days, unfortunately. And that is about building that community. I think often, not to sound too radical, but I think of the Black Panthers and some of that wraparound support and that community work that they did, providing free lunches as well, because people can't participate in our democracy if they're not whole and their basic needs aren't even being met.
Angela Lang is the executive director of Block, Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. If you have time, we'd like to keep you for one more segment to talk about your award-winning column.
Oh, boy.
Sure.
Angela Lang is with us. I hope you will stay with us as well. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning and welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and Calvin Ader coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. Call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, or the platform Elon continues to ruin on a daily basis. Our guest is the executive director of Block, Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. Angela Lang is here. We're celebrating Juneteenth Day. It's going on until 8 o'clock tonight, the celebration, right, Angela?
I believe so. Mm-hmm. I actually don't know how long. We're just there all day. We don't really know time.
It's 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. At West Locust Street and North King Drive.
Yep.
The parade already happened, but there's going to be, as you said, food and music and all kinds of things going on all day long. So make sure you go down and get some good food.
Yeah. Just enjoy.
Yep, absolutely. You had an award-winning column in the Recombobulation area. Dan Schaefer is a frequent, a weekly guest on our show. And congratulations for that, by the way. And in it, you take a very close look at the Black community and the concerns of the Black community and whether or not they are being responded to. And you just talked about knocking on doors, and we had a comment from Andrew asking, do politicians solicit feedback to the same degree once they're elected? Or does it only happen during the campaign season?
That smile says, I got the answer right there.
Sorry. I'm often told my face is a problem. I love the question.
You want to play poker later, Angela?
What I will say is I laugh because I wish that were the case.
Yeah.
And I will say this isn't everyone. It's not a blanket statement. You know, I would say the folks that we are the closest to as an organization are the ones that continue to maintain that relationship after they're elected. But unfortunately, that is not everyone. And that is one of the things even our own ambassadors say. Somebody said this to CNN, and it was like, you know, when you all sell us kind of all these dreams in the campaign, and then we never see or hear from you again, and then maybe you take some questionable votes, you know, and then you start wondering why people don't continue to show up, and that, like, people feel disenfranchised. They feel misled. They feel, you know, duped in a lot of ways that folks were trying to sell a particular candidate. And then at the end of the day, they were finally persuaded and then they never see or hear from them again. And they felt very exploited and used. And it's not a good feeling. And we hear that a lot. And I think that's a lot of why folks, I think, are frustrated with the process, is because they think people either change up when they're in office or there's very little to no communication.
Yeah, it's real easy to make promises when you're on the stump, and then it's a whole other thing to deliver those once you get elected.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's also very easy for politicians to say, and I think Barack Obama did it while he was on the campaign trail in 2008. He goes, I am not always going to make you happy. I can't promise you that. And I think if politicians made it more realistic and said, you know, I'm going to take votes that are going to seem crazy to you, or I'm going to do this or that, or, you know, I'm not telling the voters, like, hey, manage your expectations, but also the politicians can make it easier and not paint themselves as these shining bright, I don't want to say
gift saviors fairies.
Of like, I'm going to help you. And then we never see them again. Well, there can be explanations of that. I'm not defending them, but it's just like when they build themselves up so big and the people then believe in them so deeply, and then they go to Washington and it's like, well, what did you do to us? And then I think that's part of the thing you talk about, Angela, in the article, is, you know, that idea that don't just assume the community. And I'm going to stop talking, let you talk more about your award-winning article, Angela Lange.
Thanks, Greg. I mean, the point I was really trying to make is that especially folks in 53206 and in our community broadly, if they're struggling day to day through issues of mass incarceration, trying to make ends meet, whatever their issue is, housing, and then you have a candidate that goes in front of you that says, I'm going to do all these things about your issues, and then you vote for them, and then their basic needs still aren't being met. And let's also talk about, if your basic needs aren't being met, let's continue with housing. It is that much harder for you to actually register to vote and actually be involved in democracy if you're worried about where you're going to lay your head at the end of the day. And so if people's basic needs aren't being met, especially when they were promised during a campaign that they would be met and they're still struggling years later or after, you know, someone's term, people start to lose faith not only in that candidate, but in the political process as a whole, because they've seen this so many times. So when folks are actually to that point, it's likely not the first time that they've experienced this or they felt betrayed by a candidate. It's just now I think it's coming to a breaking point for a lot of folks.
Well, and
people need to deliver.
And I think too, Angela, you kind of pointed this out at the beginning. There is so much expectation for the Black community to turn out for a Democrat, no matter what. And that is not only unfair, but it's delusional.
Yeah.
You're not, I mean, no community is a monolith or right for every one candidate. It just doesn't work like that.
And I tell people all the time, I get it. You know, we understand that the trends show that Black voters tend to be more on the Democratic side, which is why there's a lot of a concerted effort by the Republicans for voter suppression. But I think also at the same time, I think people want to feel that they're like just being just generally heard. And I think a lot of times people just don't for whatever reason. And when you don't see these candidates, and I also think it could be a, you know, we talk about kind of co-governance as organizers. It could be a symbiotic relationship. Take the hard votes that the community needs you to take, because the community is going to have your back and defend you to do it, mm-hmm. right? Like it could work together. It's like, oh, I want to take that vote, but I can't. Well, you have a whole group of folks, like organize your constituents. I really wish elected officials would organize their own districts a little bit more, because then one, you're building those relationships with folks. People are seeing you. And then if you are taking like a weird vote, there are times I've disagreed with some of my political friends, but we've had conversations. They said, hey, this is the dynamics. This is what I have to do. Okay. And you understand this is what I have to do. And there's like a mutual understanding mm-hmm. versus like taking a bad vote and then like dodging me.
Right.
Which is what happened last week.
Oh,
I wish we had more time.
Well, then Angela Lange with the hot
like, I'm not
goss.
Names, but, you know, there's a certain vote I wasn't
the name
with
rhymes the with. I'm just kidding.
Let's just say it's RNC related.
Shock.
Okay.
If people would like to get involved, Angela, and learn more about Block, how can they do that?
Yeah, so we're on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok for the young folks at Block by Block MKE. And then our website is blockbyblock.org.
We will make sure that it's included in the show notes. She is the executive director for Block, Angela Lang. Really appreciate you making time for us today. Thank you so very, very much. Happy Juneteenth. Have a good time today.
Thanks. Take care, y'all.
You as well. Stay with us. News is next. And then when we come back, a new segment called Just Kill Me Now. You're listening to Matt and Air on Air, coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network.
When I move my body just like this, I don't know why, but I feel like